Well, here's an unlikely path for you. Prairie Village to the Dr. Phil show to the Metropolitan Opera. Got that? That's the journey Ben Bliss has taken as he makes his way up the ladder as a rising tenor in the world of opera. His path takes another step this Saturday. He'll be performing in a Discovery concert at the Folly Theater downtown as part of the Harem and Jewel series. Ben Bliss, of course, isn't the only opera sensation from Prairie Village. The great Joyce DiDonato is a Prairie Villager as well. Ben Bliss, welcome to Up to Date. So hey, good to have you back in town.
Yeah, thanks. It's great to be here. Always good to be back.
What is it about Prairie Village, Ben?
Oh, man, who knows? You know, I mean, this is a point that Joyce has spoken to with a lot of force in the past, and that is the support of arts and public education here. And that's something that I got a really good dose of when I was a kid growing up at Belender Elementary School in Indian Hills and Shawnee Mission East, and I think that has a lot to do with it.
That path rings a bell in my household as well.
Oh,
so
good.
So you know Joyce, obviously.
Yeah, we met for the first time at the Met a little over a year ago, and when I was in college and I was just kind of getting my feet wet in the opera world, I went to go see a Met broadcast of The Barber of Seville with Juan Diego Flores, who also sang in this Harem and Jewel series in 2002,
right.
I think it was. And at the intermission, they always have the stars come on and talk, and she came on and said, "I'm Joyce DiDonato from Prairie Village, Kansas," and I about fell out of my chair. I was in Southern California at the time, and I was like, "What? Prairie Village, Kansas? There are like 10 people from Prairie Village. Come on."
Yeah, right.
And
right.
Yeah, and so we met at the Met a couple of years ago, and I had my introduction already. I was going to say, "Hey, Joyce, I'm Ben Bliss. I'm from 74th and Belender." You know?
what did she say? I bet she laughed.
Well, you know what? She actually, I came in and I said, "Hey, I'm Ben." And she goes, "Ben Bliss?" And I was like, yeah. And I'd been in an opera competition in New York, the Tucker competition, and had won an award, and she had seen on the website that a tenor from Prairie Village had won, and so she had my name in her mind, which was kind of a thrill.
You know, help me here. I'm a little confused. You're 6'4". You're mm-hmm. You're skinny as a rail. You don't look anything like these Italian famous opera superstars we've come to know over the years. What's up with that?
Well, you know,
you don't fit the type, Ben.
Yeah, I can't tell you how I ended up being over 6 feet tall, or why the other guys ended up being, you know, that wide. But
yeah,
you know, I think that works to my advantage, and the genesis of the opera world continues. It's got a lot more competition from movies and Netflix and these kinds of things, and so it's becoming more of a visual art, and so people, you know, are looking for a certain visual aspect to accompany, you know, great singing. So, you know, that hopefully that's worked to my advantage.
Okay, explain something to me, because this may be way misguided, okay? But I always thought, you know, the short, stocky operatic singer, you know, there was some that provided a little bit of force and a little bit of oomph to the voice that maybe a skinny guy wouldn't have. Is that completely nuts?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know. You can be often surprised of the bodies that certain voices come out of.
Well, I'm surprised to hear the voice I just heard coming out of your body.
I mean, I think that sometimes bigger people, when it's all about breath support and everything
like
that.
Yeah, exactly.
And take a really, really deep breath. Maybe if you have a little more heft on your body that's providing that pressure to help the air come out in that way.
Okay, now I feel better, because that's sort of what I was thinking for whatever reason. Yeah.
Well, but, you know, it's I think you can produce the same effect with my body type and how you manage your air and everything like that.
You know, help me with this career trajectory you've been on here, Ben, because you got a degree in film from Chapman University. Then you spent 2.5 years working on the Dr. Phil show, okay? Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you decided to try a career in singing. Let's break this down a little bit. Why film and why Chapman University?
Well, it all started at home. My dad is a freelance cartoonist. Hi, Bob. And my mom, Judy, she sings in the opera chorus in
right.
Kansas City.
Sure.
Has for years and years.
Yeah.
And so I grew up with music in the house all the time and going to see my mom's operas on Sundays. And I just was not interested. Not really my thing. But in high school, I was in choir and enjoyed that. And football was always my thing. Still a huge Chiefs fan. And Joe Montana was my hero.
You
know.
You go.
But in high school, I was 6'1", but hadn't quite filled out yet. I was like 120 pounds, something like that. So
playing it wasn't going to happen.
That I played for like a year and a half, and it turned out that was not as downhill stream as I would have liked it to have been. And so I got really into theater, and that opened the door to film for me. And I was really, really interested in the visual storytelling process and wanted to go to film school. And to do film school, you should go to Southern California, it seemed to me. That's where all the action is. And to pay for it, I figured my best shot at a scholarship would maybe be a music scholarship to sing, because I had some success with that in high school. And so that's how I ended up at Chapman. They offered a choir scholarship, even if you were not a music major. And they assigned me a voice teacher there, which I was not planning on. And my sophomore year, Patrick Gazer is his name. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal mentor to me. And he said that he was going to lower my grade if I didn't try out for the opera.
No kidding.
And so I tried out, and they cast me as Tamino in the Magic Flute. So here I was, you know, going to sophomore film classes and carrying around a 400-page Mozart score with me, learning 2.5 hours of German music. And
you weren't really into operatic music at that time, or am I wrong about that?
Well, that was sort of how I got into it. Once
you
I did the Magic
Flute,
it,
yeah.
I really enjoyed that. The combination of, you know, difficult music, but that seemed to fit my voice well. And I'd taken some German in high school, and so I had a leg up there, and I just really enjoyed the challenge of it, because it's, you know, it's like rubbing your tummy and patting your head, where you're doing a lot of things at the same time. You're trying to act and be on stage and keep your singing together with a 100-piece orchestra and singing in German and doing all this stuff. And and I really liked it. And so I did a Benjamin Britten opera the next year and did a music minor. I was like, all right, cool. Well, you know, that was fun.
For people who don't naturally gravitate to opera, what did you like about it, Ben? What was it that began to light you up about it?
Well, for me, it was really being, at the beginning anyway, being involved in it and doing it and being a part of that process. Because I always enjoyed the theater and being on stage and the process and sort of the magic behind the scenes and everything.
Right.
And as time went on, doing Mozart and then Benjamin Britten, composers that are separated by 200 years, you really start to see during the time of being invested in those scores, the juxtaposition of them and how they're similar and how they're different and how the styles have diverged but kept the same bones and how they build off of each other and how playful they are. That's what Mozart is something that luckily, I think for me, sits well in my voice. And so I sing a lot of Mozart. And one thing that I love about that is people think of Mozart as this, you know, an ivory bust of this white-haired, brilliant genius. And, you know, that he was. He was a once-in-a-millennium genius, a really incredibly brilliant guy. But he was a total party boy, you know? Mozart was a total party boy. He was, you know, he died broke because he spent all of his time partying and goofing off. And that's one of the reasons he died early. He got sick. And he was a young man when he wrote most of these operas. I flew in yesterday from Atlanta, where I was doing a production of Abduction from the Seraglio. And in that, the main tenor character is in love with a woman named Constanza. And what I love is while he was writing this opera, he's about 25 years old, and he was too broke to be living on his own. So he was living with a former violin teacher who had a daughter named Constanza, who he was falling madly in love with and ended up marrying. Hmm. And so there's all these arias in there, these aching love songs about Constanza. And, you know, that's not some white-haired genius who's been dead for 200 years. That's just some 25-year-old guy who's fallen in love and happens to have, you know, a miraculous mind.
So you graduate from Chapman, and you were still sort of aiming towards film at that time, though. You weren't doing the singing thing right away.
Right.
How did Dr. Phil happen? Because it took a long time to even to get on that show, and you were kind of began as an errand boy, basically, didn't
you? Yeah, absolutely. Well, if I learned one thing in college doing music and film and trying to get all this stuff done at the same time, I feel like I really learned how to hustle. That's what I always tell young singers, is that, you know, nobody's going to come and knock on your door and offer you this or that. And so, I graduated from school, and I was still solidly aiming towards a career in entertainment the whole time. So I moved I didn't quite move to LA yet. I went up to the public library and printed out a list of all the bars in Hollywood, because I just finished bartending school, because I realized my film and music degree wasn't doing everything that I had hoped it would.
Yeah.
And so I went from door to door, all these different bars in Hollywood, and ended up getting a call to work at one that was across the street from a studio, which was perfect. And so I'd, you know, serve up the suds and the chicken wings to all these studio guys and just talk to them and kind of hustle them. And finally, these guys said, oh, I work for Dr. Phil. And I said, well, you taking interviews? And they said, well, yeah, you know, here, email me. So I emailed the guys like twice a week until they got me an interview and got the job. So I was an errand boy. And then my second year, I had this awesome boss named John Perry, and he's the supervising field producer. Still works on the show. You can see his name in the credits. And whenever Phil shoots something that's not on the soundstage at Paramount, John Perry directs it. And so I got to assist him, which was great because it was production and it was problem solving. Every day was different. I spent a lot of one-on-one time working with Phil. And
did you like him?
It was okay. It was an interesting experience for sure. I learned a lot.
It was 18-hour days, right?
Well, yeah, it was really pretty grueling. It was long days and a lot of work and a lot of problem solving. And despite all the hard work, I wasn't quite kind of making the money I wanted to make to just be comfortable. So my third year, I managed the on-air promo department for their spinoff show, The Doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And we shot six shows a week, and I had to sort of wrangle my staff to deliver a set of on-air promos every day. And I think I was like the fourth person to have that job in about 8 months.
Wow.
So did it for a while and wasn't super happy. So I found the opportunity to leave, called my voice teacher from Chapman before I left the studio. As I was walking out the security, I just said, well, Patrick, I think I'm going to give this singer thing a try.
Yeah, what made you think that was the big reverse course in your life, Ben? What made you think about trying singing again?
Well, you know, I kind of missed it. I always really, really enjoyed the craft of it. And I hadn't done it for a while. And I thought that maybe that door would still be open. And Patrick had always been really, really encouraging. He, you know, as a tall tenor, he always said, oh, there's no tall tenors out there. And he thought my voice was particularly well suited to it and that I had the sort of the drive and the ambition to really go after it. And so he said, you know, I often have to tell students that they might have to have a day job to support their singing habit. And he said, you might have to have a singing habit to support your film, or you might have to have a singing job to support your film habit.
Oh,
and so I thought, oh, well, that would give that a try, see what happens. And, you know, it went pretty well.
Tenor Ben Bliss is my guest. So then you end up doing this series of auditions for the Los Angeles Opera that culminated in the appointment to sing for Domingo, the great singer. No pressure there, right?
Yeah, right. Actually, surprisingly, I was nervous going into it, but once he came into the room, all of the pressure disappeared.
It's a great guy.
Yeah. I mean, people ask me, oh my God, what was he like? I mean, honestly, with all due respect, he was like Santa Claus. He came in and he was like just this smiley guy and came over and put his arm around me and said, hey, what will you sing? And I said, oh, I'm going to sing Ecco Ridente from The Barber of Seville. And he goes, ah, Ecco Ridente. And he starts singing it because the pianist was a few minutes late. So he says, hey, sing with me. So we're singing.
Oh,
he goes down
kidding.
And sits down at the piano and starts playing it. And we're just kind of goofing off singing this. And the pianist walks in. And so then I did the audition, and it was, he really, really
well, that took the pressure off a little bit, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a really warm environment. And then second, he said, we will hear you sing No Puede Ser. And that was an interesting one, because when I was at Chapman and Patrick was telling me, you should consider being a singer, I said, all right, well, I'm gonna look into this. So I'm gonna do my research. So, you know, what do? You go download the Three Tenors CD, which I paid for. So. But I was listening through it and was thinking, oh, maybe I could pick out one of these tunes and learn it. And the one that jumped out at me was Domingo singing No Puede Ser, which is from Zarzuela, which is like a Spanish sort of musical theater, soap opera, operatic drama. And I sang it all the time in college because, especially my senior year, I was back doing mostly film stuff. And
so you were comfortable doing it for him then?
Yeah. And, you know,
he
liked it a million times. Yeah. And I sang that and he said, I approve.
Did he?
It was really cool to sing the song that I heard him sing and kind of motivated me and then get to sing it for him. It was pretty cool.
He's been pretty supportive ever since, too, hasn't he?
Yeah. He's, in addition to being a real phenomenal vocal talent, obviously, with some serious longevity, he's really, really dedicated to nurturing young singers, and he's such a great people person. He still remembers my mom every time she sees him backstage somewhere.
Oh,
how is your mummy? Is your mummy here?
Really? Is that what he says?
He's awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you were talking about Mozart a minute ago, and I want to play some of you singing Mozart here. You've called Mozart the supreme puzzle master, and of him, you've said this, Ben: everything he writes, no matter how sensual the melody, is underpinned and supported by this incredible musical structure that the singer has to observe. That structure is in everything he gives you to sing, which is one of the reasons I love Mozart so much. Explain the importance of that structure to me, and keep in mind I'm a layman here. What does that mean?
Well, to me, in Mozart's music, there's always... It comes from his personality that I was talking about, I think. There's this playfulness to it, and there's this motor underneath where it's always driving forward, and there's some psychological energy in it. Because in addition to being a great composer and knowing how to write for the voice, he's this incredible dramatist and human being, and you can always feel that in there. And so there's this structural motor to it, and also this human motor to it that makes it so easy to access, and also shows you... Mozart's music to me always sounds so alive because the combination of those two things show a savvy performer how it goes. It almost plays itself. And even within that structure, there's always room to wiggle and to interpret.
That's interesting. What's the piece we're going to hear here? Do you know?
I'm not sure. It might be O wie ängstlich, which is from the opera I mentioned, Abduction.
Well, let's listen. And if it's not, we'll correct it on the other side, okay?
Perfect.
Get it right?
Yep, that's the one.
Well, that's spectacular.
Oh,
it's just amazing. Yeah.
Thanks.
I should point out that Ben Bliss will be performing at 7 Saturday evening at the Folly Theater in a performance presented by the Hiram and Jewel Series. This Discovery concert is free. More information, hjseries.org. What's the toughest part for all of this for you? What's the challenge?
Well, in the recital setting specifically, it's that it's not a 400-page score where you sit down and you say, oh, I sing this aria and this duet and this ensemble. The recital setting is a real pleasure and a challenge in that all the music, I start from scratch, and I pick it all based on the music and the poetry and how it all fits together. And so it's also trickier to learn. It's in like 4 or 5 different languages, and it's 15 pieces as opposed to just one big opera.
Better you than me, Ben. I mean, man. I should point out, I just met your wife backstage. You performed with her when she was then your fiancée. I assume you've done it as she's been your wife as well. She's a bassoonist. You're a brave man to be performing on stage with a wife like that. Is that tricky or not?
Oh, no. We're always looking for a chance to do it because, you know, one of the tricky things about this profession is that there's a lot of travel involved. So, you know, I was just in Atlanta for a month and going to be in 5 different cities doing this recital. And then I go to New York for 5 weeks over Christmas, which is great. You know, you don't get bored. You're always seeing something new. But a chance to perform together is a chance to be together in the same place for an extended period of time, which is all I'm ever looking for.
Well, I love the bassoon, so tell Dana, a great choice of instrument. And again, you can hear and see Ben Saturday evening at 7 at the Folly Theater, part of the Hiram and Jewel Series. It's a free concert. More information, hjseries.org. Ben, what a pleasure to have you here. I wish you all the best down the road. Keep going, man.
Thank you very much. It's
great to
be here.
Make Prairie Village proud, okay?
All right, you got it. Thanks.
That's tenor Ben Bliss. Time for a break. When we come back, a new way of looking at our rape culture. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR.